America Looks Abroad.
This is the 52nd in a series of broadcasts presented by the staff members of the Foreign Policy Association, a nonpartisan organization which offers accurate information on world affairs. Today's subject is Russia's role in the world conflict. The speaker is Mrs. Vera Michaelis-Dean, director of the Research Department of the Foreign Policy Association. Mrs. Dean.
Thank you. As Germany intensifies its air attacks on British war industries, it is also hastening its efforts to bring the entire European continent under Nazi rule. The past week has been marked not only by fierce air raids on industrial centers in the English Midlands, but also by great diplomatic activity in Eastern Europe and the Balkans. On Wednesday, Hungary joined a pact recently concluded by Germany, Italy, and Japan regarding a new order in Europe and Asia. Yesterday, Romania followed suit by joining the Axis Alliance, and similar action is expected to be taken soon by Bulgaria, whose king met Hitler in Germany last Sunday. These diplomatic moves are designed to prevent any action on the part of countries in Eastern Europe and the Balkans, which might directly or indirectly prove of aid to Britain. Most important of all, they are intended to isolate Greece and to frighten Turkey into abstaining from intervention in the Mediterranean campaign. To carry out these diplomatic maneuvers, Germany needed the acquiescence of Russia, for Russia is Turkey's next-door neighbor, and while Turkey has agreed to aid Britain, it has specified that it will not become engaged in war with Russia. You can see that if Moscow today should tell Turkey it must cooperate with the Axis, the Turkish government would be placed in a dangerous dilemma. It was apparently to obtain Russia's approval of their plans that the Nazis invited Mr. Molotov, the Soviet premier, to visit Berlin on November 12. So far as can be determined, Mr. Molotov listened to Hitler's plans for a new order, but made no definite commitments. On the contrary, when it was reported in the German press that Hungary had joined the Axis powers and Japan with the full approval of Russia, the official Soviet news agency declared this report did not correspond with the facts in any extent, nor is it clear yet that Russia has made any material concessions in the Far East to Germany's partner, Japan, which is pressing negotiations for a non-aggression pact with Moscow. You can see that under these circumstances, Russia's position in the world conflict becomes again of paramount importance. What can or will Moscow do? It is customary in Western countries to describe Russia as a great enigma. Opinion in Britain and the United States regarding Russia has been further confused in the past 20 years by the rise of communism, which is regarded by some as a mortal danger to the Western way of life, more deadly even than Nazism, and is hailed by others as the only hope of modern society. Division of opinion in Western countries regarding the aims and character of communism, and hence regarding Russia's role in world affairs, has contributed more than any other factor to the ideological confusion of our times. This confusion was greatly increased in the summer of 1939, when Moscow came to terms with Germany. Russia, the one great power in Europe which had consistently opposed Hitler, suddenly concluded a non-aggression pact with the Nazis, which gave Germany a free hand to attack Poland and then turn against France and Britain. The Soviet government, whose founder Lenin had denounced imperialism, assumed an imperialist role, and within a year occupied the Baltic states, eastern Poland, a part of Finland, a section of Romania, all of which had been lost by the Russian Empire at the end of the last war. Stalin, who had again and again proclaimed that Russia wanted peace and would not take one inch of any other country's territory, flung the Red Army into war against Finland. No wonder that both foes and friends of the Soviet Union were bewildered by these apparently contradictory developments. And their bewilderment was further increased when communist parties outside Russia, following the new line of policy dictated from Moscow, suddenly abandoned their previous hostility toward Germany. Instead, communist spokesmen in all countries declared that the war had been provoked by France and Britain for purely imperialist motives, and urged their supporters to oppose war and advocate peace. Now, there are two questions we must ask ourselves in discussing Soviet foreign policy. Did Russia's acceptance of a non-aggression pact with Germany in 1939 represent a change in its policy? If it did, what produced this change. Without going too far back into the history of the last World War, we must understand that when the Soviet government came to power in 1917, it was not friendly either to Germany or to the Allies, at whose side Russia had been fighting since 1914. The Soviet leaders believed that both Germany and the Allies, as well as Russian Tsarism, had been fighting an imperialist war, which, whatever its outcome, could only injure the workers of all countries. In the opinion of Soviet leaders, the only good thing about that First World War was that it offered an opportunity for world revolution. They believed that the disillusionment and bitterness created by 3 long years of struggle would lead soldiers and workers in all belligerent countries to demand peace, as well as improvement of their economic lot after the war. The Bolshevik Revolution in Russia was regarded by the Soviet leaders as a signal for revolt on a world scale. Their own slogan, addressed to Russian soldiers in the trenches, to workers and peasants behind the lines, was bread, peace, and land. This slogan, they thought, would find an echo in all belligerent countries. Russia would then become the standard-bearer of the communist revolution. These hopes of the Soviet leaders were shattered by the course of events. Germany did experience a change of government in 1918, but not a social revolution. Short-lived communist uprisings took place in Hungary and Bavaria, and a trend towards socialism became noticeable in a number of European countries. But on the whole, the end of the war marked an attempt to patch up the political, economic, and social institutions of the pre-war period, rather than to effect the fundamental revolution anticipated by the communists. Fear of communism, as practiced in the Soviet Union, became one of the dominant forces in post-war Europe, and it was impossible not to identify fear of communism with fear of Russia. Many attempts, as you know, were made by the Western countries to quarantine Russia, to isolate it from the rest of the world. When this proved unsuccessful, and Russia resumed a part in the affairs of Europe and Asia, attempts were made to curtail its influence and relegate it to the background. This fear of communism and of Russia, so prevalent in Western countries, was skillfully used by Hitler, who himself denounced communism as the enemy of Western civilization. Both at home and abroad, Hitler promised that Nazism would prove a bulwark against communism. By his campaign against communism, he won many adherents, not only in Germany, but also in certain circles in France, Britain, and other countries. Fear of communism thus played into the hands of the Nazis before the outbreak of the war. Just as Germany's reconciliation with Russia in 1939 proved helpful to the Nazis once the war began. You can thus see that there was no love lost in the past 20 years between Russia and the Western powers, France, Britain, and the United States, which after the Soviet Revolution had intervened in Russia against Bolshevism. In fact, the first countries in Europe to establish relations with Russia after that war were its former World War enemies, Germany and Turkey. This we must remember when we try to understand Russia's present relations with Germany. Because Germany, ever since the days of Bismarck, has been guided by 2 main considerations with respect to Russia. First, the Germans regard Russia as an essential source of food and raw materials, as well as a market for their manufactured goods and a field for their technical experts. Second, the Germans have always feared the possibility of war on 2 fronts and have again and again sought to establish friendly relations with Russia. When Hitler, in 1939, concluded a non-aggression pact with Moscow, he rid Germany at one stroke of the nightmare of war on 2 fronts and made it possible for the Reich, in some measure at least, to draw on Russia's food and raw materials. Now we must understand that Moscow, from the outset, has regarded both Germany and the Western powers as capitalist countries. It has believed that the capitalist countries are bound sooner or later to attack communism. Moscow's only question was which of the 2 present belligerents would prove more dangerous to Russia. In the early post-war years, when Germany was weak and the Allies relatively strong, Moscow feared the Allies. when Germany, after Hitler's rise to power in 1933, began to grow stronger and the Allies became relatively weaker, Moscow began to fear Germany and hoped it might get assistance from France and Britain in case Germany attempted to attack it. But when France and Britain permitted Germany to seize Austria and Czechoslovakia, the Russians decided they would get no aid from their allies and came to terms with Germany. This does not mean that Russia is no longer afraid of Germany. On the contrary, Russia is probably more afraid of Germany right now than it was in 1939, before the outbreak of the war. But Russia is not prepared, either from the industrial or the military point of view, for a conflict with Germany. Moscow's chief aim is to preserve the neutrality of the Soviet Union and to avoid a war with either Germany or Japan. At the same time, it would like to benefit by the advantages it now enjoys in negotiations with Germany and Britain. The real question is, which of the two belligerents has more to offer Russia? To answer this question, we must again look at the world conflict from Moscow's point of view. Moscow hopes that neither Britain nor Germany will win this war. It hopes that the two great belligerents will so exhaust each other that neither of them can be a threat to Russia for many years to come. A German victory, which would leave the Nazis in complete control of Europe, would be regarded by Russia with grave apprehension. But a British victory, which would leave the British Empire unimpaired and presumably no more friendly toward Moscow than it has been for the past 20 years, would also not be welcome to the Soviet government. What we may expect is that Moscow will continue to hold aloof from the conflict, intervening only to protect its own interests, as it did in Finland, the Baltic region, and Romania. At the same time, it will remain on the alert for developments indicating that the possibilities of world revolution may be revived in the course of the present conflict. The Russians believe that the time may come when the conquered peoples of Europe, resentful of Nazi rule and disheartened by the outlook for the future, will turn to communism. Should that time come, Russia may once more assume the role of standard-bearer of the world revolution envisaged for it by Lenin. And of course, fear that just this may happen is being used today by the Nazis to strengthen their hold on Europe, because millions of Europeans, even today, regard Nazism as preferable to communism. Only slowly and through bitter experience are people in Europe beginning to realize that Nazism is effecting on the continent a revolution as profound and far more efficiently organized than that contemplated by the Russian communists. Only slowly are they learning that Nazism is not an effective safeguard against communism, any more than communism proved an effective safeguard against Nazism. Only slowly are they discovering that a strengthened democracy offers the one alternative they seek, now that they are confronted with a tragic choice between Hitler's New Order and Stalin's World Revolution.
Mrs. Vera Michelis Dean, Director of the Research Department of the Foreign Policy Association, was today's speaker in the America Looks Abroad series. If you would like a free copy of this talk, address your request to the Foreign Policy Association, 22 East 38th Street, New York, or in care of the station to which you are now listening. Either to 22 East 38th Street or in care of the station to which you are listening. The Foreign Policy Association is a nonpartisan organization open to all who are interested in American foreign policy. It offers accurate information on current world happenings. In the world of today, foreign affairs are your affairs. And we invite you to tune in next Sunday at 2:15 Eastern Standard Time to hear another speaker in the America Looks Abroad series. This has been a presentation of the National Broadcasting Company from the RCA Building in Radio City, New York.